All right, welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're going back to basics, looking at a really foundational document. It's the 2014 Western Cape Provincial Spatial Development Framework, specifically the annexures.
Exactly. And if you want to get to the root of the challenges the province is facing now, well, you have to look at this baseline from back then.
So our mission today is really to shortcut that for you.
We're boiling it down. This document is essentially a snapshot, a detailed map of the Western Cape status around 2014. Mm-hmm. You know, space, economy, resources, the built environment. It really sets the stage for everything that came after.
Okay, so let's just dive right in. The people and the space. The document makes it clear this is a fundamentally urban province.
Oh, massively. I think the number was 81% of people living in formal residential areas.
Yeah.
And the demographics are, well, they're pretty unique for South Africa.
Right. 49% colored, 33% African, and 15% white. It's a very different mix.
It is. But what's really critical here is the growth. The population was growing faster than the national average, and it was driven really heavily by in-migration.
And where were people coming from?
Well, a huge chunk, 35% from outside the country, and another 31% from the Eastern Cape.
And that kind of migration, it puts a unique strain on things because at the same time, household sizes were actually shrinking.
Just slightly, from 3.7 to 3.4 people.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's huge when you think about it.
It's the hidden cost, right? Fewer people per house means you need proportionally more houses, more pipes, more power lines, more services for, well, fewer people per connection.
And then there's the geography of it all. The document talks about this incredible concentration.
Staggering, really. You have 74% of the people and, get this, 85% of the province's GDP all crammed into the Cape Metro region.
And you compare that to the Central Karoo, which is vast and almost empty.
Exactly. And that disconnect is where the policy tension really starts to build.
Which leads us straight into socioeconomic vulnerability. So the province has higher average income, sure, but the document just hammers home the point about the huge disparities.
They even map it out with a vulnerability index. A score near zero is good, means you're less vulnerable.
And the city of Cape Town scores best, around 0.4.
Right. But then you go just a few hours out to the Central Karoo, and that score jumps to over 0.6.
Mm.
The wealth is just not spreading out. It's not creating uniform resilience.
And you see this most clearly with housing. I mean, the scale of the problem back then was just immense.
The backlog was estimated at 594,385 units for the whole province.
Wow. And how much of that was in the city?
61%.
Yeah.
Stunning 61% of the entire provincial backlog was right there in the city of Cape Town.
And it wasn't just a numbers game, was it?
No, not at all. Formal housing just couldn't keep up. So you get this chronic overcrowding and the rise of informal backyard housing, which the PSDF flags as a huge challenge for dignity and for service delivery.
Okay, so let's shift to the economy. It's strong, dominated by finance, real estate.
A third of the GDP right there.
Yeah.
And again, 85% of all that economic value is generated in just two spots, the Cape Metro and the Cape Winelands.
But that concentration has a flip side.
A huge one. It puts this intense localized stress on the environment. I mean, by 2009, 21% of the province's landscape was already transformed from its natural state.
And in the metro, it was much worse.
Oh, yeah. Almost 58% transformed in the metro itself.
But the real Achilles heel, the document warns, is water.
It's the critical constraint. The document is so explicit. Every single water management area, except for one, the Breed, had a negative water balance.
And a negative water balance is a polite way of saying what exactly?
It's a very polite way of saying you're using more water than you can sustainably rely on in the long term. You're running a deficit. They were basically laying the groundwork for the future drought crises, even back then.
So all this pressure, people, economy, environment, it all funnels into how settlements are planned or maybe not planned.
Right. The document points out how new housing projects keep getting stuck on the periphery, on cheap land far from jobs. It even uses Worcester as an example.
Creating these isolated, monofunctional dormitory suburbs.
Exactly. It just locks people out of the economy.
So if we pull all these threads together, the annexures are painting a picture of what? A province with a powerful economic engine, but also deep spatial inequality, huge migration pressure, and a fundamental resource sparsity.
That's the core of it. And the real insight for you, the listener, is what the document suggests we do about it.
So what is the big takeaway then for the future of planning?
Well, the document makes this really crucial distinction. It says that good infrastructure, you know, upgrading wastewater plants, fixing roads, it doesn't create socioeconomic development on its own.
It just enables it.
It enables it. And that's the whole challenge. The question that remains is how you ensure that those billions in infrastructure spending are strategically aligned, not just to service the wealthy core, but to specifically tackle informality and reverse that ingrained pattern of pushing everything to the periphery. Getting that alignment right is still the hardest part of the puzzle.